All right, let's jump into it. The 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Keep it down with those Skittles over there. All right, what do you got, Adam?
We're going to start off with some movie talk. Yes. Interesting question here for you. What is the worst scene you can remember from an otherwise good or great movie?
Okay, that's a good. You know what this, where we could land with this, is a really great movie that had a bad ending.
Yes.
Which that can be, you know, a lot of TV shows have kind of gone out like that, that didn't have real good endings to it. Gosh, I'm just trying to think. You know, some of them, like, not going to be The Godfather, Godfather 2.
Oh, no.
I'll give you one right here. As a professed Star Wars dork, I thought that, well, I thought Darth Maul got killed way too easy, but the prequels were not getting away. I thought Vader just throwing the Emperor down the chute, I thought that could have been an epic fight with Vader and Luke against the Emperor. I thought it was way too easy. So I'll give it Return of the Jedi, one of my favorite movies, love Star Wars. And that would be one that, were I George Lucas's advisor, I would have said, you know what, let's really turn this into something great.
Yeah, I can see that. I remember, I wish I could remember. I know there was supposed to be a different ending to Return of the Jedi where I think Luke kind of, after everything happens, he goes off on his own, doesn't go back down to Endor to celebrate with his friends.
I got you.
And it was supposed to be much darker, much more kind of uneasy, but they changed I'm actually okay with that.
It was a very happy ending, just like, you know, originally, like, Harrison Ford wanted Han Solo to die, but just
right.
Like, no, come on, we're not going to kill Han Solo. So that'd be one that would come to mind for me when I'm thinking about, like, some of my favorite movies of all time. Do you have any that come to mind for you?
One that really sticks out to me, I love the X-Men movies. I think that Days of Future Past was one of the best movies that came out that year.
I'm not a big X-Men fan, but that movie is terrific. The way they did it around the Cuban Missile Crisis, I think Fassbender's terrific. Mm-hmm. When he went down and killed those Nazis in Argentina.
That was First Class.
First Class. All right. First Class is the one I'm talking about. But no, did you like that one?
I did. It was good.
Yeah, when he went down and killed those Nazis, I thought that was terrific. Okay,
yeah,
but
fantastic.
Days of Future Past did something that bugged you?
Days of Future Past has one scene kind of around the middle after you had this great action set piece where Quicksilver is running high speed and it's a slow-mo scene. It's just beautifully done. And then they get on a plane and you get what should be a really great dramatic encounter between Fassbender's Magneto and James McAvoy's Charles Xavier, and they're talking, and there's this just weird beat where they start talking about supposedly Magneto is in jail because he was implicated in the assassination of JFK, and he says, no, I was trying to save JFK because he's a mutant and they were trying to kill him.
Oh, I see.
And it just stops the movie for me every time, and I cringe, and I'm just like, can we get past this scene and move on? And then we do, and it's all better. Because it's a great movie, other than the ridiculous plot point of, no, JFK was a mutant, and that's why they killed him. I hate that scene.
I knew it. I knew it all along. But no, that is, and there are some great movies, obviously, where there's just a scene or two. You know, not everything's going to be perfect for everybody. There's some movies like that I thought were really good, that I enjoyed, that I'll give you one for an example that I thought just had some terrible casting. Like, I mean, listen, I'm a huge Godfather fan. I've seen them
a
million times. Guess.
Godfather 3 with Coppola.
Well, that should have just never been made. No. I'm talking The Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino, which I thought was a terrific movie, except you got Keanu Reeves, and he's trying to bust down a Southern accent, too. I really like the twist of all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, Al Pacino playing Lucifer. I mean, does it get any more delicious than that? But you got Keanu Reeves, and it just said, I'm thinking, they could have gotten an unknown, even, you know, one of the other, I don't know, Tom Cruise, you know, anybody else could have played that role, and it would have been so great. So that's when it's like, I love the plot line to it, and it's an entertaining movie, but then it's Keanu Reeves, and you just can't get past it.
Keanu Reeves trying to do any kind of accent is really just terrible. If you've ever seen the Dracula movie from the early 90s.
Oh, well, that's Bram Stoker's.
With Anthony Hopkins, Gary Oldman is Dracula, right.
And he kind of ruins that, too.
Yeah. Keanu Reeves tries to do this kind of, like, English thing.
It's bad. It's,
although nothing touches...
It's not consistent.
Nothing touches Nicolas Cage and Con Air with that Southern accent. That is one of the most... It's awful, but it's so funny. Like, I love Con Air, if only because you had to hear Nicolas Cage trying to be Southern.
Let me just say, that's a movie we saw in many a baseball road trip. I'll tell you that one there. All right, that's good stuff. Love talking cinema. All right, what's next, my friend?
Next I got for you, who has the better chance in a potential UGA, Georgia Tech, NIT rematch? Obviously, I'll be honest, I don't see Tech getting past Indiana. But if they do...
And it ain't going to be easy for Georgia against Belmont either.
No.
I'll promise you that. You know... Georgia beat Tech earlier in the year. Here's the good thing about it. Both teams will be motivated
right.
because you're squaring off against each other. You know, I would say Tech probably had the more impressive conference season. But the thing with Georgia, you know, as we've said, Georgia's got a good team, just weren't quite good enough. So where Tech got to help, did Tech beat Notre Dame, Carolina? Did they beat Duke also?
I think they were close against
Duke
in one game.
But they beat Carolina and Notre Dame, so
right.
they got some nice wins. You know, for Georgia, the Dogs came so close against Kentucky and Florida. But I think if it's and obviously South Carolina, too, and Texas A&M, we all know that. I think if it's here, I think the place will be packed. I would take the Dogs in a close one. But, again, don't overlook old Belmont there.
Right.
So like I'm saying, like with Georgia and Notre Dame this fall, don't forget about App State.
Right.
Do not forget about App State. Do not forget about App State.
Yeah, I would relish actually to see a Georgia Tech rematch. The interesting thing to me is that in the past, it's felt like Mark Fox's teams would get better as the year went on,
mm-hmm.
and so you would always have that early Tech game. That's why there was a four-year losing streak.
Right, right, right.
And so by the end of the year, it was obvious that Georgia was better than Tech because Georgia would be a tournament team, whereas Tech would be, you know, what, 7 or 8 games below 500.
Mm-hmm.
They would just be abysmal, but they had that loss early in the season. Whereas if you were in that kind of situation, it'd be interesting. It'd be easy to say, well, Georgia's going to beat Tech at the end of the year because a Mark Fox coach team is always just that much better. But this year it seems like there wasn't as much progress, whereas Tech, you're right, they had those wins against Carolina and Notre Dame. They played Duke close once, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And they did seem to get a lot better as the season went on. So I think it would be interesting to see – it'd be a good barometer for Georgia, if nothing else, to see how have you improved from the beginning of the year against another team that has also improved immensely throughout the season.
I think it's a good point. It'd be a great atmosphere for sure. David Harris tweets us, otherwise great movie with a terrible ending, Monty Python's The Quest for the Holy Grail.
See, right. But...
Thank you, David.
You know, I have to disagree there just because that was their thing. Like, they always ended sketches with somebody getting arrested for no reason. So it's one of those things, yeah, it's silly, but it kind of fits.
I got you.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
It's hard. A lot of great comedies, the ending was kind of, it's like, well, how do you wrap it up?
Right. It's so hard to end any story. Well, it really is.
Right. I mean, and to me, especially a comedy, because the point of the movie is just laughter. So you've got to wrap it somehow. Like, I thought Caddyshack ended pretty darn well with the dynamite going off and the ball going in. Hey, Moose, Rocco, help the judge find his checkbook. Oh, but, you know, there are some. Like, I didn't think that Animal House is one of my favorite movies. You know, the ending of that is, it's okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vacation, they hold up the park and all. It's okay. But it's hard to make a really good ending for a comedy. Although, you know, the hardest thing to do in a movie is a comedy sequel.
Yes.
Because they almost all stink.
Yeah.
You know, Christmas Vacation was great, but you had European in between. I mean, I've never even seen more than 5 minutes of Caddyshack 2, and that might be my favorite movie ever made. And it's just comedy sequels are, you know, I was like, Ghostbusters 2 was watchable.
It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad. It was watchable.
It was funny. It had moments.
It was. But I mean, you know, it's nowhere near
no.
the first one. No.
Yeah.
Anyways, continue on, sir.
Question number 3. In the spirit of the, I don't know, did you see that great welterweight fight this weekend between Bush and Logano?
Coach, I was okay, I got you. I was, 90% of my time was at Foley Field this weekend. But no, when did they get into, was that yesterday or Saturday?
I think it was yesterday.
Okay.
That's when I first saw the video of it.
Little pit row fight.
Yeah. In the spirit of Bush Logano, what sports might be improved by adding or just allowing fighting? Kind of like hockey does, where they allow them to fight and then throw them in the penalty box.
Basketball? I don't know. I don't know, Sam. That'd be some of those big dudes whacking each other around. And speaking of which, you know, NASCAR, what was really a breakout moment, I guess the first year the Daytona 500 was televised, and maybe this was planned, I don't know. It would have been like pro wrestling. You had the Fame fight between Cale Yarborough and Bobby Allison, and that just took it, boom, to another level. So, some good brawling. You know what's interesting in hockey? The international game, it's a wider rink, and it's a more beautiful game, and there's not nearly as much fighting just because you're not getting checked and it's not as tight and as tough in there. You know, so I'll give you one. For international football, when those guys take a dive, it's like you took a dive for pretending to get kicked in the leg, okay? Mm-hmm. Guess what's about to happen?
You're going
to
get kicked in the leg.
You're going to get kicked in the leg. So I think that would be a good one there.
Oh, that was actually the first thing I thought of when I came up with this question was I think soccer, at least men's soccer, is one sport that would be vastly – because the thing about women's soccer, they do throw down.
No, they do. Oh, it's intense.
I loved – like
there's some hair pulling and it's tough.
Covering women's high school soccer, I always thought it was the craziest thing to watch because you're right. The men, they will go down, they'll dive, they'll flop, and they'll say, oh, man, I got pushed.
They don't seem to flop in the women's game.
No.
No, I don't. And I've actually been fortunate enough. I've broadcast for the SEC Plus some of the Georgia women's soccer games.
Right.
And, no, all these girls are tough, and I have not seen any flopping.
No, they throw down. It's
but
awesome.
It can get – oh, but there's some elbowing.
They are
some,
vicious. Yeah. And I love that about women's soccer.
No, it's tough.
I think the men's game could really learn a thing or two from watching women's soccer. And
I agree.
You know, ramping up that level a little bit. But, yeah, I think soccer is probably the number one for me, that if you just kind of let them fight a little bit and then give them the card,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that would be a lot more fun. Because I'm not a soccer guy, I admit, but I would probably watch that.
Let them rip. And I'll say, too, I really enjoy the World Cup because that's the one thing I've said. That's the closest thing to having the passion of SEC sports, of SEC football. And I'm like, yeah, I know, like you said, you had covered some high school girls soccer. I mean, I really enjoy the women's soccer in college. It's great sport. There's more scoring. There's a little bit more action, you know, going back and forth. So I tend to like that better. You know, some of the Premier League stuff is good because it's intense.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, our buddy Mike Mobley, who's worked a couple of Olympics with me, says fighting in team handball would be fantastic there. That's a great sport, too. Handball is a great sport. But, you know, a lot of – you know, I know people would say golf and tennis. It's like, no, you can't. I mean, golf, of course not. And
no.
Tennis, there are a couple of times I'm like, yeah, John McEnroe and Yvonne Lindell back during the Cold War, I was like – yeah, I could have seen those two throw down. That wouldn't have been all bad.
No, that might have
been.
Maybe not. That would have been some highlights there.
Maybe not. That was a good one, though. What else you got, bud?
Who is the weakest one seed in the field of the NCAA tournament, in your opinion?
All right.
You got Kansas, Nova, Gonzaga, UNC.
I think you probably have to go with Gonzaga. Just as great a team as they have. The pressure they've got on them. I mean, Nova's a defending champ. She about
right.
Played with house money. Can you imagine that? You win the national title, you come back, you're number one most of the year. It's just a dream scenario.
Right.
Obviously, Kansas with a great pedigree. They might have the most talented team. North Carolina, the national runner-up a year ago, they're red hot. I would say Gonzaga looks to be the most vulnerable. Although, when I look at their bracket – I think it might be the softest bracket of the four. What would you say?
I'll be honest. I have not been overwhelmingly impressed by UNC this year. I know.
No, they're getting hot at the right time.
They are, but they've just,
no,
you
I
know,
agree.
If you really want to, and I know this may be a bit unfair, but you pull out that Duke-North Carolina series, letting Duke take the 2-1 lead there, including that game in the conference tournament. I really just feel like against some of these better teams they've played, they have struggled a bit. They have... If I'm not mistaken, they had the most losses of any team. It's a number one seed. They have
seven
losses.
Yeah.
That's pretty suspect to me, especially when you compare it to a team like Villanova. to finish the season in a very tough Big East with only three losses.
Right.
Gonzaga, of course, their conference isn't that great. They only got the one loss against BYU, which
was... Right. And they swept St. Mary's, what, three times, I think it was.
Right. And St. Mary's is not a bad team either.
And how about them putting them in the same... That's kind of weak. They put them in the same region there. I mean, I know they're one, and so they wouldn't play to the Elite Eight, but still.
Right.
Yeah.
The regionals, you know, that's we talk about. What was the coach a few weeks ago who said something about a conspiracy to sell tickets?
Oh,
yeah.
I mean,
I think the regional. The one argument you can make is that the regional is certainly set up in a bit suspect manner. But I feel like UNC. They may not be the first number one to lose, but I think they're probably the weakest.
You think they're
on the
field. Weakest. Okay. Let's see. For the twos, you got Louisville, Kentucky, Arizona and Duke. That's a pretty royal.
That's a good group
of number two seeds. Let's see, Louisville's got three national titles. Kentucky's got eight. That's 11. Arizona's got one. And Duke's got five. So
right.
I mean, all the twos have got national titles. So it's hard to find one there. I like Michigan there. I got them.
Yeah, I've all actually right. got Michigan beating Louisville in the second round. So
yeah,
I think Louisville. They're a good team, but they've also been kind of uneven this year. Kind of the same thing I'd say about UNC. They've been just uneven, and so I feel like Michigan, if they really keep riding this wave, then I think they've got a good shot there.
All right, how about out of the threes, you've got Oregon, UCLA, obviously the pedigree, Florida State, and Baylor. So you've only got one of the traditional powers there. That's why
right.
I would not be surprised if a 14 took down a 3.
Well, I think the obvious choice would have to be Oregon just because of the injury they took late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, I don't have a ton of confidence in Iona, but I do actually have Creighton beating Oregon in the second round.
But that's a good league that I can that Iona is the MAAC whatever that they is Iona Siena those that's a good tough league, mm-hmm. and they've produced some teams that have given some of the big
true.
Boys some scares through
very
the
true.
Years. Yeah, they certainly have.
But,
so that's but I'll take God that list of two seeds though that is. That's very impressive mm-hmm. there. But Michigan's a team, I'm telling you.
I think they've
got a little something going with them right yeah. now. They did with everything that happened. All right, what do we yeah. got next,
One
Adam?
Last question for
okay.
you, number five, to round us out. Maybe not the best worded question, but I think you'll get the sentiment of what I'm going for here. Who is the most surprising famous UGA alum to you? Now, obviously, if you know the list, it's not a surprise.
No,
but I guess
it's not.
When you look down the list and you see some names, it just – Who kind of is unexpected that stands out to you? We know the football stars. We know some of the big media personalities.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, that's – you know, I've been Mr. Georgia my whole
right.
life, so I don't know if there's anybody who's really – I mean, is there one for you that you were surprised?
To give you a good example.
Like Wayne Knight.
Yeah, I think that's
right.
a great example of
yeah.
one that, you know, if you grew up watching Seinfeld, you're like, wait a minute, that guy's a Georgia alum?
Right,
yes,
right.
he is. In a similar vein, Josh Holloway, who is on Lost – He was only here for a semester.
Okay.
I know he wasn't a long-term guy,
right.
but he is a Georgia guy. You know, I know he had a younger cousin who I actually went to school with, knew her vaguely. One that I think is always hilarious, Kermit the Frog. Kermit the Frog
okay.
is a UGA alum, and what I mean by that, to ruin the mystique for any Muppet fans out there, Steve Whitmire, the man who holds the Muppet, and he's performed
okay.
as a couple of others. He is actually a UGA alum. Actually went to high school with my father-in-law, and they're kind of friends when they see each other in passing. It's like, oh, hey, Steve.
So the guy, so obviously Jim Henson did the Muppet.
Right, Jim Henson, when he passed away.
Yes.
Interesting story there, too. But when he passed away in the early 90s, he passed on Kermit to Steve Whitmire. And since then, Steve Whitmire, who is a UGA grad, has been performing as Kermit.
How cool. That's a good one right
so
there.
So Kermit the Frog. If you've ever seen, there's a great little YouTube video, and I think UGA softball actually uses this, where the Muppets are in an elevator, and they start humming the battle hymn.
Oh, how cool.
And it's because it's a good elevator song.
I think I've seen that,
If you've ever seen that, one of the reasons
yes.
is probably because Steve Whitmire is a Georgia guy.
Now that is some cool stuff right there, Adam. That's why we keep you around and pay you the big bucks, my friend. Very, very good. Is that all we got for this one?
That's five.
All right. That is beautiful. That is the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Our buddy Mike, ooh, this is a good one. For more fighting, how about weightlifting?
Oh, my stars.
All right, we both power clung 725. We've maxed out. We're about to go into the cage and
rumble.
That
just sounds dangerous.
That sounds very dangerous. There was a great Saturday Night Live skit from the late 70s, early 80s called The Steroid Olympics. And there was a guy trying to lift like 1,500 pounds, and he's sitting there, and he just stands there. Oh, and his arms came off. The arms are still stuck to the weights.
Look, steroids are great, but everyone knows that the best training regimen is little chocolate donuts.
Little chocolate donuts.
Little chocolate donuts.
I like little powdered ones here. It's all good. It's all good. All right, let's run into a timeout. I'm going to try and track down the great Jack Bowerly. He is on a bus in Indianapolis on his way to the NCAA championships. This is Athens, home of the Dogs, and that was your 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system a solution. This is 960 The Ref.